Recent studies on radiation risk and dose assessment models for radioactively contaminated soil inside buildings and outside surfaces. We will be joined by two speakers today. Our first speaker is Stuart Walker from the EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. He's been here at EPA headquarters since 1990 in either the Superfund program or the Office of Radiation and Indoor Air, working on issues regarding the cleanup of contaminated sites. His primary areas of responsibility include serving as the Superfund program's national lead on issues regarding radioactively contaminated forklift sites, in which he helps to develop national policy for the characterization, cleanup, and management of the radioactive contamination at these sites. And then we'll be joined by our second speaker, Dr. Nasser Shubert, who is a research scholar in the Department of Nuclear Engineering and Radiological Services at the University of Michigan Ann Arbor. Nasser was here as a former research fellow at EPA in the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation, and he is also a consultant with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Mazaria 2 program, if I'm reading that acronym correctly, working Group 1, and he has obtained his doctoral degree from the University of Massachusetts Lowell in Biomedical Engineering and Biotechnology and Radiological Sciences. So with those brief introductions to our presenters, let me call up their content and turn things over to your very first speaker, Stuart Walker from EPA. So Stuart, whenever you are ready to begin, please do.
Okay, thanks, Jean. Let's wait for it to come up on my screen. And hope everyone can hear me fine. So the purpose for my is to briefly describe EPA's need for a study comparing risk and dose models for evaluating radioactively contaminated sites. And this is the genesis for Nasser's work that he'll talk about for the bulk of this presentation. So EPA has six risk and dose assessment models for dealing with contaminated sites for soil, buildings, and outside hard surfaces. These models undergo extensive internal reviews and external peer and verification reviews. But if we were thinking internally that a comparison study, which would provide another method for potentially improving the EPA Superfund models, by evaluating some other models that are out there to look if they had some more updated science in some areas, or if they were looking at routes of exposure that were addressed that may be relevant for Superfund sites that we had not started to address it in our models. So this is basically trying to see what we could learn from other models that were out there. So the inspiration for the work that I asked Nasser to do was a previous EU study, a European Union study, their member states, basically looking at chemical risk assessment models. So they initiated a discussion on the reasons for their differences of these chemical risk assessment models. The report that's entitled Derivation Methods of Soil Screening Values in Europe, a review and evaluation of national procedures towards harmonization. And you see a picture of the cover there with the horses with the weird wigs on the top of them. So the EU study had 12 models they looked at across different countries, and they looked at different pathways and different default input parameters that those models were using. Here's a table that summarizes the models for which countries are being reviewed and the pathway they looked at for each of the models. And the European study also included comparison of results when running those models. So they looked at some of the common chemicals that you see at contaminated sites across Europe. And then they looked at the different screening levels or minimally acceptable levels for residential land use for each of those chemicals running the models with the standard defaults in there. They also looked at that, the same models where they also had industrial land uses and ran the models to see what some of the minimally acceptable or screening values were for those each of those contaminants running the models. And so I thought that it would be good if we would take some kind of similar look at either contaminant levels or the fault input parameters that were in the radiation models, both domestically and internationally. And that's what led me to getting NASA to start on this study. And I'll let NASA talk the rest of the way on that.
Thank you, Stuart. Today we're going to talk about the project that I worked with EPA on them. It's five research projects that study models that use for contaminated soils and buildings and outdoors surfaces. So during the time that I worked with the stores, we worked on five research projects to establish documents that gather information about other agency modeling approaches. And the main objectives of these studies are to make internal recommendation on technical and practical issues to the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation, and also facilitating better understanding of each agency's modeling approach, and also identifying the similarities and differences between these agencies in the risk assessment of radioactively and chemically contaminated sites. We didn't put more focus on the chemical models, but we put the focus on the agencies that developed consistent models for radiation and chemicals, and there are only two agencies that have done that, and we will talk about in this seminar. So the first project was about contaminated soil, which is overview of radiation risk and dose assessment models for radioactively contaminated sites and selected default interferometers. This project gives an overview of each model and also lists the common default input parameters. Now we'll talk about the models that address the contaminated soil. It's an overview, and then after that we're going to talk about the default input parameters. On the national level, five models included in this study, the EPA PRG calculator and the EPA DCC calculator, the Department of Energy reside on site, CUDE, and the New Jersey Radioactive Soil Remediation Standards, and the NCRP report number 129, recommended screening limits for contaminated surface soil and the review of factors relevant to site-specific studies. On the international level, we studied CHROME, a model that was developed and used by Spain, and WISMENT, a model was developed and used by Germany. The UK Arcelia was developed and used by the UK, and Normalisa was developed and funded by the International Atomic Energy Agency and adopted by Sweden. And we had a longer list of models that we wanted to include, it, but for some reason we dropped some of them. So so not all the models developed in the same format. You can see here some of the models were developed as internet-based calculators, such as the EPA models, PRG and DCC. Others as software-based calculator models, such as RISRAD, Normalisa, and CHROME, and some other models were implemented in Excel spreadsheets, such as the UK Arcelia and the New Jersey model, and others as table in reports like the NCRP lookup tables. Let's now talk about each model. We start with the EPA calculators, the PRG, stand for Preliminary Remediation Goals for Radio Clients. It was developed by EPA in 2002 and last updated in 2017. The PRG is consistent with EPA chemical risk assessment models for chemical and soil and water and air, and both models are risk-based tools. DCC calculator, DCC stands for Dose Compliance Concentrations. It was developed by EPA in 2004. It is similar to the PRG calculator, but for demonstrating compliance with dose-based regulations. RISRAD was developed by Oregon National Laboratory for the U.S. Department of Energy in 1989 and updated last in 2016. RISRAD can be used to calculate site-specific guidelines and radiation doses and also access lifetime cancer risk. Normalisa stands for Norm and Legacy Site Assessment. It was developed by the International Atomic Energy Agency. and it was then it's mostly used by Sweden. And Normalisa has library of models organized in four different modules, which is which are source, transport, receptor, and those. And one thing here about Normalisa that this model has no user manual, and we conducted our study by studying the model itself and by asking questions to the developer of the model. So Chrome was developed by the University of Madrid, and the environmental impact of the energy department in Spain in 2011 and updated last in 2016. It contains a default database with about 150 regional clients. Chrome can be used to assess the impact of discharge of regional clients to the environment, and it can be used also for continuous and prolonged release. The UK Arcelia was developed by the UK government, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs in 2003. It consists of a collection of worksheets that contain all input data and results. Arcelia considers 47 radionuclides that are commonly found in the radioactively contaminated sites in the UK. And one thing here about Arcelia that Arcelia, the UK Arcelia, and have the UK Arcelia has another model for chemical that both of them they have a consistent methodology, and this is our third project we will talk about in detail later in this presentation. So the New Jersey model radioactive soil remediation standards was developed by the Bureau of Environment for Environmental Radiation of the State of New Jersey in 2003. The New Jersey model is implemented in Excel spreadsheets and contains only 7 radionuclides and their progenies. It assumes 2 construction scenarios, basement and slab on grade, for 2 site use scenarios, residential and commercial. WISMET was developed by the Germany Federal Lander on the WISMET and the WISMET GmbH company. The name WISMET is referred to the area that were adversely affected by 40 years of unrestrained mining and processing of uranium ores. WISMET was developed with a special consideration for the WISMET region, such as the level of each natural background in the area. It can be used to assess radiation exposure of the public and workers due to the environmental radioactivity resulting from mining. It is also applicable for remediation and decommissioning and the reuse of mining plants. It is important here to mention that WISMET is not available in English and not accessible due to the copyright agreement, but I used the user manual to complete this study. We decided to include WISMET in our study because some parts of Normalisa was taken from WISMET. The NCRP report number 129 has lookup tables for screening limits for contaminated surface soil. The table list for over 200 radionuclides with half-life greater than 30 days. The following slides present the common default input parameters used in the models. As we said earlier, we want to include the default input parameter. We want to see the variation between the parameter's value and also which parameters are considered by each model and which are not considered. Also, it was known that many risk assessment consultants that run the models use the default input parameters, even though modelers recommend using site-specific input parameters. So in general, the default input parameters generate conservative values or assessment.
Nasser, before you go any further, just a few people have asked if you could slow down just a little bit, but other than that, you sound okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So some of the default input parameters that were included in this project, it's physiological factors, dietary factor for human food consumption, and also soil consumption, animal consumption rate, shielding factors, occupancy factors, and mass loading factors. So the physiological factors include gender, age, and breathing rate. From this table, you can see that the UKR cilia is the only model differentiate between male and female and has different parameters for each gender. Age classification tells us implicitly about the intended use of the models for receptors. The models with several age classification are usually intended to be used for the public and the worker. The models that have adults only indicate that the models is intended basically to use for workers and sometimes for adults from the public, but that's not always true. Sometimes you can change the parameters as you want. So also the values of the breathing rate parameters used by the models are based on one or more of the following factors: the scenario or gender, age, and occupation of the receptor. And some of the models like the UK Alkalia, and it's unique about the UK Alkalia, they have different parameters for passive and active breathing. And also other models, they have the breathing rate based on the indoors and outdoors. So you can see from the from this table that for example, if we take the EPA breathing rate, it's based on the scenario and also the occupation of the receptors. In NCRP, the breathing rate is based on the scenario and whether the receptor outdoor or indoor. So for the five parameters are considered for human food consumption: drinking water consumption, fruit, vegetables, and grain consumption, and milk, dairy consumption, meat and poultry consumption, and fish and seafood consumption. So I will go quickly over this number of graphs just to give you insight about the variation in the value of the parameters. So the default value of the amount of drinking water consumed is usually obtained from public surveys. You can see the variation in the value even in the same country, such as PRG and Israel, both from the United States, and they have different values. And that's it's in based on the regulatory frame or the policy of the agencies. It can affect the parameters value. So other some of the models assume the water is 100% contaminated, such as WISMET, and other models do not use parameters for drinking water, such as Arkelia, and also this we should take in consideration that the regulatory frame of the agency that developed the model, they developed the model to use it for specific reasons. So if someone wants to use other models from different countries, he must be first read the about the agency that developed the model and their policies. So, and about the PRG and RISRA, you can use a fraction of contaminated water, because the consideration for a resident that has access to water from uncontaminated municipal water is different from a farmer using wells water in contaminated sites. So this graph shows the number of items including vegetable and fruit consumption. EPA models have 24 kinds. Some other models use one general category for the vegetable without specifying that what kind of vegetables. This graph for milk consumption parameters, blue bars for adults and orange bars for a child. Alkali and the nutrition will have no milk parameters. And this graph for meat consumption, APA models have two values. The blue bar are fresh weight and the orange bar for cooked weight. You can choose one of them. When you are trying to run the calculator, you have the option to choose one of them. The cooked weight is lower than the fresh weight, as you see in this graph. And as far as I know, it's the only model that from the model that it's very known that has two values, like for fresh and cooked weight under medium. Same things here for meat consumption for children. Here is the fish consumption for a child, and now this graph, we see the EPA models use higher values for fish consumption compared to other models. You can see the gap between the fish consumption between PRD and RISRAD, and also the EPA with other models. And that's basically the reason behind that is the regulatory the parameters were chosen based on some policies in the agencies. And here are the fish consumption for a child and adult. Normally, sand chrome had parameters for infants, which is with the gray color. And it was not clear the range of age for infants because it wasn't mentioned in the user manual or in the model themselves. So I just added them just to give indication about the use of the models. And you can see the differences between the two agencies in the age classifications, and also what age range and what value of parameters that we use. We learned a lot from studying different modeling approach for different agencies. So this graph shows the soil consumption for adults. EPA has different values based on the worker occupation. For example, the indoor worker consumes less soil than outdoor worker or construction workers. In general, most of the values are similar or within one standard deviation from each other. For this graph, we can see that the child and infant have higher soil consumption values than adults. Let me go back to this slide. You can see here the Normalisa infant and Wismet, they have the same value, and by investigating that, we found that Normalisa used some modules from Wismet and also used the same default input parameters. So for the animal consumption rate, the models have parameters for fodder, soil, and water. We see from the graph that EPA has 11 kind of animals considered in this in their models. Normalisa and RISRAD, they have two, but for the same animal, beef for milk or beef for meat. And you, in Chrome, they have the animals parameters, the animal consumption rate parameters. They use large animal and small animals. So, and they have parameters based on the size of the animal. It's not what kind of animals. So here's just an this graph shows the cow's fodder and soil water consumption rate in each model. The soil consumption rate is not seen in the graph because the value is so small. Shielding factors, and here's the one of the things that we want to mention, that the name of parameters should be considered when using any models. So in this graph, the shielding factors refer to the reduction of external exposure rate from on-site buildings or other structure while the individual is indoor. And the meaning of shielding factor could be interpreted in two opposite ways. So in all the models in this study use the shielding factors as the reduction of the indoor external radiation compared to the outdoor, except Arcalia. Arcalia denotes the opposite concept for the shielding factor compared to other agencies. So this is one thing also we learned, and we want to mention that. So for anyone to study models or to use another model, it's not about just it should be the name of the model, the parameters, and it should be known and the meaning of them, and it is for what, so he can use it in the correct way. So this project is especially important for the International Energy Agency, the development, testing, and harmonization of models and data for radiological impact assessment program, which is the name Moderia 2. The information presented in this project is relevant to the ongoing discussion in Moderia 2 on the applicability and harmonization of different tools such as are recommended by governmental agencies. So in this regard, we have three recommendations for follow-up report. First, running each model using default parameters and common region client several scenarios, and also running each model with the same scenario and region client but with consistent parameters, and including parameters which may have been too difficult to include in this study, like the transport factors. So we couldn't recommendation because it was hard for me to do all of them, because studying the models and knowing how to use them, it wasn't easy. It was very complicated. And we make this recommendation for the International Atomic Energy Agency working groups, so it's easy for them, because experts and modelers, they gather twice a year or something like that, and they can agree on some criteria and run the models and compare them and study them and also achieve the goal of the Moderia program, which is the harmonization between each, between the risk assessment models. So in conclusion, because we had some people that they said we shouldn't include the input parameters, because some other people, they will think that this is the value that you should use, or you are promoting for a different agency or another agency. So we want to assure that this study does not endorse any of the models or justifying using certain default input parameters. And things that to consider when using models: the regulatory frame under which the model was developed and parameters named and meaning should be taken into consideration. And one thing that we learned from studying the this model, that some models use parameters and modules from other models, and that led us to the second project. So we learned from the first project a lot of information that was hidden in the models and the user manuals. We learned that some parameters and modules in Normalisa was taken from WISMERT, and similarly part of the New Jersey model was taken from RISRAD, and that led us to the second project, the Handbook of Parameters for the U.S. and the International Government Risk and Dose Assessment Models for Remediation of Radiologically Contaminated Soil. So the second document presents an overview of a number of models and also lists input parameters used by these models. It can be used as a parameter reference for modelers, people who want to develop new models or want to study these risk assessment models. It's going to be a good reference for them to go over the parameters and the sources of the parameters for each agency or each model. So the third project, which is the study of chemical and radiation risk assessment methods for the United States Environmental Protection Agency and the Environment Agency of the United Kingdom. Before we get into more details about this project, let's present some background information about EPA policy, because you will see at the end of this section that the only major differences between the EPA and the Environment Agency modeling in the UK modeling approach is due to the policy of each agency. So the EPA's longstanding policy is that similar models should be used for the chemical and region client risk assessment, so that The results are consistent with some assessment, and there are four reasons for this policy. First, both contaminants are carcinogenic, and people ingest and inhale same amount of contaminated dust and food, whether it's chemical or radioactive contamination. And also, the dust gets re-suspended the same, whether it's chemically or radioactively contaminated. And number four, inorganic elements move through the subsurface, whether they are radioactive or not. And EPA used slope factors in a state of dose conversion factor to estimate the cancer risk from radioactive contaminants. So why we include the UK Environment Agency in this comparison? Because we proud several agencies' reports and website, we found that the UK Environment Agency was to some extent consistent with EPA models for radium chloride and chemical assessment tools. We will see in the next slide that the two agencies are consistent with one major difference, which is the output of the assessment for the UK models cannot be summed together, why the EPA models you can sum the outputs. So we studied the similarities and differences between the following models from the EPA. We studied the radiation model, PRG, and the chemical model, RSL, regional screening levels. And from the UK Environment Agency, the radiation model, RCLIA, and the chemical model, CLIA, contaminated land exposure assessment. So we'll talk about overview of the risk assessment tools, then we'll present the key similarities and differences between the US EPA models, PRG and RSL calculators, then the key similarities and differences between the UK Environment Agency models, RCLIA and CLIA, then we will compare we will present the comparison between the US EPA and the UK Environment Agency. So we have talked about the PRG calculator, so I would skip that. The EPA chemical model, regional screening levels, RSL, was developed by EPA for chemical contaminants in soil and water and air at the Superfund sites. This calculator, all the EPA calculators, it's a risk-based calculator. It can be used for generic or site-specific screening. And the key similarities between the EPA model, the radiation model, PRG, and the chemical model, RSL, are both are online calculators found at the EPA website. They are deterministic models with similar scenarios and default input parameters. And the radiation model, PRG, and RSL have additive cancer risk. Both have default target of 1 in a million for each contaminant. The key differences between the EPA model, PRG, and RSL are the chemical model, RSL, has no farmer scenarios and does not include produce or farm animal consumption that are in the PRG. The chemical model, RSL, accounts skin absorption, while the radiation model does not. And the radiation model accounts for external exposure. The chemical model calculator addresses the non-cancer risk, including total uranium, and the radiation model, PRG, does not address the non-cancer risk. So the UK RCLIA, we talked also about this, and I would skip it for now. We'll go to the UK chemical model, RCLIA. CLIA was developed by the UK Government Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs to perform a generic or site-specific assessment to assess chemical contamination in soil. And the key similarities between the UK model, the radiation model RCLIA, and the chemical model CLIA, both are deterministic models implemented in Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. They assume a uniform contamination to a depth of 1 meter from the surface, and both have same land uses, same building type, same exposure pathways, with one exception that the skin absorption pathway are not included radiation model. And also, we have both default input parameters and equations, and both do not consider the ingestion of animal products. The key differences between them, first, the output of the UK chemical model alkylia are contaminant-specific and not additive, while in alkylia, the radiation model, the radiation doses from multiple radionuclides are additive and compared with a single exposure criterion. The kilia includes data for 18 different age groups, while the radiation model alkylia includes only three age groups, infant, child, and adult. The chemical model alkylia adapts several soil types with one default soil type, while alkylia adapts a single soil type. And also, the chemical model kilia considers the absorption of chemicals through the skin, while the radiation model alkylia does not. Also, the radiation model alkylia includes two additional exposure pathways, which are whole body external exposure from a distance and irradiation of the skin from direct contact with the contaminated material. And the last thing is the alkylia, the radiation model adopts a higher concentration of atmospheric respirable particles in comparison with the chemical model alkylia. So here's the comparison between the two agencies. You can see from this table that EPA model, the PRG and RSL are both internet calculators, and the UK models alkylia and kilia are implemented in Excel spreadsheets. And this is one aspect that, like, what we can see from this using an internet-based calculator compared to the Excel spreadsheet, you can make the you can study how they are accessible for other people, how easy it is accessible to them. We didn't include any information about that, but this is something we discussed, me and Stuart. So, and the second thing is the PRG and RSL both have target risk of 1 in a million for each contaminant that can be summed together, while the UK model alkylia and kilia do not have risk additives. They have different outputs and cannot be summed together in the UK models. And the last three, from three to number six, we can see that both agencies are consistent in terms of using the same scenarios for the chemical and radiation models, with only one exception at EPA method, which is the chemical model. RSL does not consider the farmer scenario. And you can see also both of them use using same parameters and equations for their chemical and radiation models. Also, both agencies consider skin absorption pathway for their chemical models, but not the radiation model. So in conclusion, I can conclude that the EPA and the UK Environment Agency are consistent in their methodologies for chemical and radiation models, but there is one major difference between the two agencies, which is the output of the EPA models can be summed and the output of the UK Environment Agency cannot be summed. You can see that the alkylia generates a result with the unit millisievert, and the chemical model generates the result with milligram of contaminant per kilogram of soil, and they cannot be summed. So, I just asked this question, why, and the answer for that, it was, it is a matter of policy. So in the UK, legislation is driven by the European Union directives that separate the radioactive contamination and non-radioactive contamination. So the fourth project that I worked with the EPA on them talks about comparing radiation risk assessment models for radioactively contaminated buildings We have two agencies, the EPA and the Department of Energy and Minerals. The EPA and the DOE developed models to assess the risk from radioactively contaminated buildings. However, they are different. This project compared the models BPRG and BDCC with the Department of Energy model Israel build. So the BPRG was developed by EPA to help assess the need for cleaning up radioactively contaminated building. It is also a risk-based tool that can produce generic or site-specific assessment. RISRAD build was developed by the Oregon National Laboratory in 1994 to assess the potential radiological dose for exposed individual who works or live in radioactively contaminated building. It can perform both deterministic and probabilistic assessment. So I compare the two agencies models in the following, the exposure scenario and pathways, and also building description and the source description, the outputs, and also the common default input parameters. So the exposure scenario and pathways for the EPA model calculators are based on the receptor, such as the such as resident or indoor worker, while in the Department of Energy model, RISRAD build is mainly based on potential use of the building, such as building occupation or building renovation. We'll talk about that in detail. So the EPA calculator used two scenarios, resident, adult and child, or indoor worker, which is adult only, and three pathways for each scenario, exposure to subtle dust on the surfaces, and under this pathway, another sub-pathway is external exposure and ingestion of dust when hands contact dust loading surface and then come in contact with the mouth. And this is one thing unique about this model in the EPA, that it is the only, I think, agency that used the ingestion of dust, modeling the dust on the hand and how much dust can come in contact with the mouth. And the second exposure pathway to the exposure to ambient air, including inhalation of air and submersion. And the last, the third one is the 3D direct, the 3D direct external exposure, which is the exposure from radioactive contaminants in the building materials of the walls, floor, and ceiling. So the
Nasser, are you still with
me? Yes. Sorry, I'm still here. So the RISRAD build exposure scenarios and pathways, as we said, it's based on the use of the building. So for building occupancy, there is some scenario for resident, office worker, industrial workers, and visitor. And for building renovation, the receptor will be decontamination workers and building renovation workers and building demolition workers. Exposure pathways in RISRAD build include three main pathways, and each one different sub pathways. So building description for the two models include number of compartment and their position, and building and shielding material, and dimensions of the compartment. So in the EPA calculators, building the EPA calculators handle one compartment for each calculating run, and the building gamma shielding factor is set at one, which indicates that there is no shielding. And three features can define the compartment, the raw material room position and room size. And also there's an option for the default, which is the most protective value given from the three features. Here is how to describe buildings in the EPA model. You need to select one of the options in each column. The residual build can be used for up to three compartments. You can select one of eight shielding materials. Concrete is set as the default shielding material, and also you can display the compartment in 3D presentation. So the source, for source description, the EPA calculators contain more than 1,200 radionuclides with 18 commonly found radionuclides. The source is defined as area source and volume source. For residual build, 67 principal radionuclides and 53 progenies with total 120 radionuclides is considered in this model. The model defines several sources, point and line, and area and volume source. So for the output, EPA model generates generic and site specific tables with parameter use. And for residual build generates summary report that provides parameter use and source name and dose, or detailed report that provides intermediate calculations involving airflow and injection rates and external dose parameters. Also, you can get graphical results as interactive plotting. We compared some of the common parameters between the PRG, the BPRG, and the residual build, and you can find further details in the report. I did include the more tables here. So the fifth project and the last that I worked with Stuart on, it's the overview of radiation risk assessment models for radioactively contaminated surfaces, and we included three models from three agencies. We just did an overview about each one. So many agencies developed models for contaminated outdoor surfaces, but the uses of the models are for different purposes. Some of them are for cleanup and remediation purposes, others for nuclear emergency response. And this project addresses a review of the following models, the US EPA models, SPRG and SDCC, and the US Department of Energy, RISRAD RDD, and the European approach to nuclear and radiological emergency management and rehabilitation strategies, AIRMIN. So SPRG was developed by EPA. It is a risk-based tool. It can be used for outdoor hard surfaces such as buildings, labs, and outside building walls and sidewalks and roads. SPRG has four scenarios, resident, campsite worker, outdoor worker, and indoor workers. And each one of these scenarios has four exposure pathways. So the RISRAD radiological dispersal device, RDD, was developed by Oregon National Laboratory in 2009 to assist decision making after radionuclide release in an RDD incident. In RISRAD RDD, it is assumed that the deposition on multiple surfaces, including street and soil, roof, interior wall, and interior wall for urban, and interior floor for urban and interior floor for rural, and interior wall of buildings in the affected areas. It has a database for 11 radionuclides that are most likely involved in RDD incident. So exposure pathway included in the RISRAD RDD are external exposure to contamination on street, soil, while staying outdoors, and the same thing while staying indoor, and inhalation exposure while staying outdoors and also indoors, and submerging in contaminated air while staying indoors and also outdoors, and ingestion of dust particles on street or soil while staying indoors or while staying outdoor or from the floors or walls. So, and the last one, the last exposure pathways, radon inhalation while staying indoors. So the third model is the European model for inhabited areas, AIRMIN. AIRMIN was developed by the European approach to nuclear and radiological emergency management and remediation strategies. AIRMIN is can be used by a decision maker to assess different recovery options following radioactive contamination of an urban environment. And it is a standalone tool, but also can be integrated in different models or tools, such as the nuclear accident decision support system, the DSS, or other tools. So the AIRMIN exposure pathways include the average dose to members of the public from external exposure to gamma and beta radiation from deposited radionuclides and inhalation of suspended radioactivity, and also decontamination on urban surfaces, the activity concentration in air from wind ray suspension, and the dose to worker undertaking the recovery worker, and also the quantity and activity of waste generated, and the cost and work required to implement the countermeasure. So one unique thing here that I want to present to you today, it's the resuspension modules in the three models. In the SPRG, the EPA SPRG resuspension model are unique. It's considered mechanically driven resuspension and also wind-driven resuspension. The mechanic resuspension approach assumes that the dust is being resuspended from the road surface by vehicles, and that is specific for 50 U.S. states, and whether the roadway is located in rural or urban area. And for each roadway area, there's six roadway classes included, but the default value is based on California urban interstate average daily traffic volume, which is the most protective value. And this is a unique resuspension module used by EPA, and is specific for the United States. The RISRAD-RDD considers wind-driven resuspension and mechanically driven resuspension. For the mechanically driven resuspension, the wind-driven resuspension multiplied by 10 to account for vehicular traffic, and in one case of a factor of 100 is used for unpaved road. So AIRMIN used only wind-driven resuspension. And with that, I end the presentation. And this is all about the five projects that we conducted during my time with EPA. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you so very much, Nasser. We'll go ahead and pause now for questions and some comments from the live audience. Just a quick reminder, if you haven't sent in your questions for our presenter, you may do so now using the Q&A window, which appears on the lower right corner of your screen. Simply click on that empty box at the bottom of the window. You should be able to type up your message, and then when you're done, hit the Enter key. Nasser, I'm going to start with sort of a general concept that was brought up by a few participants, and they were interested if the IAEA has expressed any interest in the project that was brought up, where you're looking at those acceptable concentration units for radionuclides as generated by each of the models, which was similar to the EU study. Has anyone indicated if they'd be interested in doing that type of a project?
Not the agency itself, but some of the participants would be some of the like experts that they work with the in Mudaria, so they expressed some interest in such projects, because part of the goal of Moderia to do the harmonization and to study the applicability of different tools that recommended and issued by governmental agencies.
Okay, and then along the same lines, again, a number of comments have been submitted just regarding some of the variability of the input parameters and then resulting sensitivity analysis that could be done on the models themselves because of the variability of some of those input parameters. Was there any interest in doing a study like that as well from IAEA?
Not that I'm aware, but I'm trying to interact more about the participants for the Moderia too, to encourage such a study, because I found that during the time that I was conducting the study, and I was browsing many research papers and also some reports for remediation or cleanup sites, and I found people seriously use the default input parameters, even though the modelers or the agency encourage the risk assessors to use site specific data. But sometimes getting site specific data is not easy and it's costly. So it is for some people it's convenient to use the default input parameters. So I go back to your question. I will try to talk to more people to encourage doing such a study, especially the sensitive analysis, because not all the default input parameters impact the assessment. Some have small impact, some have higher impact, but that's something probably we need to talk about it more in the next meetings with the moderator.
Okay, thank you. Could you remind the audience what dose to risk models did you compare?
What was? What's it?
What dose to risk models did you compare?
We didn't compare result of assessment. We compared the modeling approach itself, like the default, the exposure pathways, the exposure scenarios, the default input parameters. Me and Stuart was were thinking about doing the comparison for the result. It was difficult because using the it's not easy first to use each model, like to understand everything in the model, and also it is the good way to do that. It's each model will be run by the same agency, and we take the result and compare them. We didn't do any comparison for the result between the models from different agencies.
Okay, thank you. One of the participants wanted to know if you know where they can get more information on how RCEA measures and models subsurface soil radiological contamination to a depth of 1 meter for radionuclides. They commented that EPA MRSM only addresses the top 6 inches of soil. And I can repeat that, but again, they want to know if you know where to get information on RCEA and measuring and modeling subsurface. You do?
Yes, I think the good way to look at the report published by the Environment Agency in the UK, they have more details, and they have technical reports published about their work. So it's a good way to understand or to find the more about the 1 meter deep assumption that in the RCLIA or CLIA models, you can find it in the report.
Okay. Thank you. So the next person basically stated that RESRAD build only considers diffusion of radon through building and not pressure-driven flow. How does the BPRG account for radon introduction into buildings on contaminated soil?
I can refer this question to Stuart.
Yeah.
Is Stuart here?
Yep, Stuart's here.
So the BPRD model is not a vapor intrusion type model. So that is actually something we have in draft. There is a chemical, what we used to call the VISL vapor intrusion screening level spreadsheet that had just been turned into an online tool that just went final within, I think, the last month. And there is a draft radon version of that that hopefully will go final sometime later this year.
All right, thank you. Let's take a look at our next question. And I'm just going to read this one. Mm-hmm. IAEA's MRAS and Modaria programs both examined application of a variety of dose risk models to similar exposure scenarios. Did you examine how your work covered similar issues and those IAEA previous studies or recommendations?
First, we have this work done for the EPA. It was separated, totally separated from the International Atomic Energy Agency. So for EPA, we did the work that we need to think that we need to know about, or things that we, the information that we want to use. But then we expand the idea that we share the project, or we discuss it with different agencies, and we share the knowledge with the with different parts. So I just started following the Modaria and the Emirates recently. I didn't have that background information, more background information about their previous work, but we will see in the coming coming time that I will go and read more about the previous reports and see what they have done, and we don't want to repeat the same things, and also we want to produce useful information.
Okay. And Stuart?
Yeah, I was going to add, Nasser, too, that the Modaria and MRAS reports that I had reviewed, and I'd been in a couple work groups, did focus a lot on some of the fate and transport aspects of various models, and did not focus as much on the input parameters that were used for risk and dose assessment, which was of interest for me as far as looking at ways to improve our existing calculators, which are steady states of the fate transport aspects were not as much of interest to me. That's actually mentioned in the back of at least one of the reports, the primary report on the soil models.
Okay, excellent. So I think that there have been a number of more in-depth technical questions that have come in, and I just want to ask Nasser, so this was a series of projects that you did, and
yeah.
In addition to making the slides available, are there reports about each of the projects that you did, and if so, are they available if the audience wants to read more of the technical details of your work?
Yes, by clicking on the resources, you provided that on the links that on your website. They have all the resources, and the first five of them is the five reports about these five projects.
Okay, thank you. So we have another question that came in, and one participant mentioned that they have encountered a lot of uncertainty in the approach used to derive the default inadvertent ingestion rates for workers and also for indoor resuspension factors. And they're just curious what you have observed in regards to those factors.
Can you say the question again?
Sure. So they mentioned that in their work, they've seen a lot of uncertainty in the approach that's been used in these models to derive the default inadvertent ingestion rates for workers and for indoor resuspension factors. And they just want to know what you saw in regards to those factors.
I haven't been in depth studying the the method that led to this value of parameters, but I know for sure that the uncertainty is high, and like some of the models that I was studying, they have parameters that they have no source for them, and they use the parameters, they don't have source for that, and they're still using the parameters, and sometimes it's there's some parameters that you can just assume number. So there is a lot of uncertainties, not just about the particular parameters that the question about, but also about other parameters in general.
Yeah, this is Stuart. I was going to add a little bit to that. So the on the indoor resuspension rates, at least for EPA, and you see this in the BPRG calculator, we look at settled dust because we're using a similar approach that was used by EPA after the 9/11 attacks with the cleanup of the debris from the World Trade Center. And in that situation, the agency made a determination that we would not look at resuspension on dust indoors because it varied too much from room to room, apartment to apartment, you know, different houses. So we went with a the expectation was a settled dust number and also looking at ambient air monitoring. So that same policy decision carries over into the BPRG calculator for radionuclides. For the as far as uncertainty on the worker ingestion numbers, yeah, I've seen some fairly different numbers put in for different types of workers, but not so much a sensitivity analysis, but maybe just because there was better data on that type of worker as opposed to a generic worker, and so a different value was used site-specifically.
Well, let's just circle back to remind the audience again the number of kind of comments or very detailed technical questions about the work. So, Nasser, you did 5 discrete projects and there during your time here at EPA. And so there are 5 individual reports for each one of those projects. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. And it's available on the website, and also the link is provided on your on the website for this seminar, for this webinar.
All right, excellent. Well, with that, let me walk through a few reminders for the audience, including how you can access those resources that Nasser was just referencing, and share feedback and share some of your experiences with the with these models yourselves as well as part of that online feedback form. So I'm going to go ahead and change the arrangement here on the screen and walk through some final reminders before we close out today. So first and foremost, I wanted to, as Nasser has mentioned multiple times, point everybody to the resources or seminar links page, where you will find not only a copy of his presentation, but as he noted, each one of those 5 reports has been linked on that page. And we also have included nearly 2 dozen other resources that he used as part of his work. So there is a variety of other references up on that page. So I encourage you to refer to the seminar links or resources page if you're looking for copies of the report or other documentation on this project. It's available right now in the middle right of your screen under related URLs. Look at that 3rd link. It says Seminar Resources. Simply click on that and press the Browse To button, and it'll open up. I've also included it in the Q&A window. So if you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying the archived version of today's webinar, you can still click those links and access those resources. If you're looking for contact information for our presenters and organizers, you will find it also on the seminar homepage, available on the middle right under related URLs. And lastly, I will ask if each of you could take just a moment and fill out our online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's session. One of the most common questions we receive for our webinars are participation certificates, and you can get one of those if you fill out the online feedback form and make sure that you check a box that appears near the bottom of that screen. As long as you check this box to certify you are here for the entire session live or you replayed the entire recorded version, when you submit your feedback, you will immediately have access to one of these certificates for your own records or to print out. If you don't check that box, you won't get the certificate. If you happen to participate as a group in a conference room, each person can fill out that online feedback form to get their own certificate, even though they may have participated under someone else's registration. If you are watching the recorded version of today's webinar, you can still follow the links to the seminar feedback form and fill out that online form to get a certificate based off of your replay of the archive session. A special note, there are a number of questions on that form related to the individual models that were discussed during today's webinar. So we do highly encourage you to submit feedback, not only to let us know about the method we used for delivering today's talk, but also the content and the items that we covered in our session today that will help us improve future deliveries. And today's session was recorded and will be available for on-demand playback. It usually takes us about 1 to 2 weeks to get that ready. So once that archive is available, you will automatically receive an email that will give you the instructions on how to access the on-demand link. And we encourage you to share that resource with other colleagues if you think it will be helpful. I want to thank the over 232 individuals who joined us from all over the world for today's live broadcast. We hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time. And I'd also like to thank our two presenters for taking time out of their busy schedules to join us for today's talk. We wish Nasser tons of luck in his new position now that he's left EPA. And again, thanks so very much for joining.